It's almost a year since officers from the Federal Police raided the Canberra home of journalist Annika Smethurst. That raid and another conducted the next day at the ABC headquarters in Ultimo in Sydney quickly made international news, exposing the restrictions on press freedom in Australia and leading media organisations like the New York Times to ask whether Australia is the most secretive democracy in the world. 12 months on, and the journalist in question still face the possibility of being charged, despite the High Court ruling that the raid against News Corp and Annika Smethurst's home was illegal. Annika is a Walkley Award-winning reporter and national political editor for the Sunday News Corp papers. She's written a book, it's called On Secrets. It's both a personal reflection on the police intrusion as well as a plea for greater media freedoms. Annika Smethurst, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Great to be with you, Fran.
Annika, it's more than a year since you had that knock on the door from the police. The warrant to search your home was thrown out in a High Court challenge, but you still face the possibility of being charged with a crime. How much does that hang over you today and perhaps every day?
Yeah, look, I must admit, a year ago when the police showed up, I'd never had any interaction with the law before. Maybe a speeding fine, but I'd never had police, any interaction with them really. And I didn't realise how slowly the process moves. And it takes an enormous toll. And I guess that's not just me, but anyone involved in prolonged legal battles, it's incredibly stressful. And I guess especially after, you know, the caravan moves on, a lot of people, the media coverage, the support, people get back to their lives, which was one thing I was praying for. I didn't enjoy being in the spotlight. Mm. But the flip side of that is, you know, it's still something you live with every day. And as you say, a year on, I still have no idea whether I'll be charged and prosecuted. And this case really hasn't advanced that much.
Are you reassured at all by the order from the Attorney General that the Attorney General now sign off before any journalists are prosecuted? That came in the midst of this debate about you and the ABC raid. Does that reassure you?
Look, it was an interesting one, and a lot of people sort of suggested to me that that was a step in the right direction, that the government didn't have an appetite for this and wanted oversight. But if that rule is in place in the future, you know, it makes people sort of, I guess, any journalist working in the press gallery would, I think, at least second guess, you know, what they might write about this Attorney General or Attorneys General in the future.
Has it had that effect on you? I mean, this is very particular to you at the moment.
Look, it hasn't. And, you know, I think I still feel that I can I'm in the position to be able to write things, and I think I have the courage and confidence to do that. But it's a tricky situation when all that power is put in one person's hand. And I'm not being critical of Christian Porter here, but for that sort of ministerial oversight and for that one person to have a control on, you know, an outcome like this, it's a huge, decision for one person to take, and something that I don't think we should necessarily see as a good step for press freedom. We need something a bit stronger than that.
At the start of this little book, and it is a little book, it's called On Secrets, is a description of what happened when the police came. I was really interested in this. The raid took hours, 7 hours, I think. From your description, they rifled pretty much through everything in your house, from your underwear drawer to your cookbooks to your oven. What did they take away?
They took electronic data, as been reported. So they also, obviously, through this raid, had access to my telephone, computer, devices in my home, and they did take text messages. As you say, you don't realise I lived in a two-bedroom apartment in Canberra, not a very, you know, very modest place that I used to rent. I don't live there anymore, and you can't believe that you've got that much stuff that it takes that long to go through, but it did. In the end, there was nothing physically taken. It was just that electronic data. And, of course, post the court case, now we know that even though the raid was deemed illegal and in many ways considered trespass, what they took, they've still been able to keep.
Taking you back to that day of the raid, you describe it in detail. You were very polite to the raiding police, engaging in small talk, offering them peanuts while they were going through your things, which is sort of an interesting psychological study in the first place.
I sound crazy, but yes,
no, it's interesting. But this it's important to realise this happened a year or more after you printed the story that had precipitated the raid. I'm just going to read one paragraph. He said, "In my kitchen, another policeman inspected my oven on the off chance I'd stored secret documents in my grill for the past 13 months. It felt perfunctory and therefore deliberately intimidating. The same feeling engulfed me when the police searched my freezer and my bin." Do you think it was meant and designed to intimidate?
Look, I have never been critical of the actual officers at my house. They were doing a job. But I think the very nature of coming to a journalist's house and conducting such a thorough raid, there's other examples I use in the book of journalists that have been called up before to ask where they got certain information. I'm far from the first. But usually that's a very, I guess, a civil discussion between a journalist and the police force, where they'll say, you know, how did you find this out, or who have you been talking to? And very regularly a journalist would say, well, I'm not going to tell you that, and we all move on. This was a very different case and quite unusual, and I think, yeah, I do feel that it was deliberately intimidating, some of the things they were doing. As I say, as they came, I was about to empty my bin, and I was holding a bin bag, about to take it down. It had food scraps from the last few days, as they do, and they insisted on going through that. Like, if they wanted to touch my bin, so be it. I definitely wouldn't have, but it did feel, you know, ridiculous.
But if it was designed to be deliberately intimidating, who do you think had made that decision to intimidate, and who was the intimidation aimed at? You, journalists, or people who speak to journalists, i.e. whistleblowers?
Yeah, I guess that's been my bigger concern, is that journalists tend to be a tough bunch, and I don't know how much what I went through and the ABC went through will actually deter people from getting to the truth. In some ways, it might actually strengthen our resolve, I guess, to expose secrets that the government might be trying to keep from us. But I think it really does send a terrible message to whistleblowers. And in this country, I think we already don't necessarily treat whistleblowers as well as they are treated in other countries. I think we have a culture where we don't like dobbers. And because of that, I think it's really hard for people, whistleblowers, to come through. And I found during some research in the book that most of them don't. And most of the people that do eventually go to the press actually try so many other avenues first. They go through official means, through their workplace and other things. So
that figure's phenomenal. Is it 97%, I think you wrote?
Yeah, they try and either raise it internally or go to an official body like an ASIC or whatever their sort of gripe is. About 1% or something end up going to the press, and not before trying another way. So, but there is an assumption that I think whistleblowers are sort of outsiders in society and dobbers. And I think this goes further to alienating people like that.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Annika Smethurst, National Political Editor for Sunday News Corp Mastheads. Just on the whistleblower, I mean, you have become, and it's not a job you wanted, but a poster girl for press freedom. But on this notion of whistleblowers, which is one of the elements that the press freedom campaign is calling for change, is it possible to know what impact these raids on your house and on the ABC had on the willingness of whistleblowers to come forward? As a journalist, have you experienced that? Have you spoken to others? Is it measurable in any way?
Look, unfortunately, it's not. It's the stories you don't get. But anecdotally, I know it myself and a number of journalists I've spoken to, regular sources of theirs have said, I'm worried because of what has either happened to myself or the ABC. So they're the ones we do know, let alone the people that are seeing things go wrong in government institutions or agencies or departments and are not speaking up. And I guess they're the ones that's the stuff we worry about. Personally, I guess it's been really hard for me. The moment I say who I am on the other end of the phone, I think there has been an assumption that, you know, whether my phone's being bugged or listened to, or that the police could perhaps turn up again. And especially building those trusts with politicians who I work with, obviously, in Canberra, has been incredibly hard to sort of regain that trust over the last year.
What do you think about the penetration of the Right to Know coalition? That's all the major media organisations, News Corp 9, ABC and others, coming together following these raids to push for greater press freedom. Has it cut through? And what do you think the pandemic has done to that campaign?
Look, unfortunately, the pandemic has taken a lot of the steam out of not just this campaign, but a lot of things that we, you know, worried about last year. I don't think that's a reason to stop. Look, I think it was an amazing feat to get, you know, usual rival media organisations together on the one page and calling for this. And I don't think that should be underestimated. I think we have a long way to go. Unfortunately, through faults of our own and faults not of our own, but through, you know, the way the media is perceived and this assumption of fake news and other things, that the media isn't trusted. And it's not just the media. A lot of institutions and organisations are going through this trust deficit at the moment. So we do have quite a job to rebuild that before people like and understand are willing to give us any more rights than we already have. But I guess the bit I try and stress in the book is it's not about making journos above the law. You know, we understand these laws are there for a reason. But just, you know, if there was some more, I guess, certainty and structure around the way in which we operate, then the stories we produce, I believe, would be better, and therefore that respect level would go up and people would be more willing to fight for press freedom.
Okay. Annika, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Annika Smethurst is National Political Editor for the Sunday News Corp mastheads, and her book is called On Secrets. You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 13 minutes to 9.